You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
One of the biggest casualties have been, and again, I use this word which people often think is derogatory, but I actually say with affection, the middle brow comedy has gone extinct.
This is The Backdrop. I'm Kevin Blyer. I promised to return to The Play That Goes Wrong, and here we are. If you don't already know, The Play That Goes Wrong is a great play about, well, a bad theater troupe that puts on a terrible murder mystery. Everything that can go wrong does go wrong. It's as simple as that.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Please allow me to introduce myself. I am Chris Bean, the director of the Cornley Polytechnic Drama Society. And I'm delighted to be presenting to you this evening an extract from the murder at Haversham Manor.
In part one, I tried to solve the mystery of how such a seemingly simple show hides its comedic complexity behind pratfalls and Tony-winning set design. And to get to the bottom of it, I spoke to actors Matt Harrington and Matt Walker, and the co-creator and original actor in the show, Henry Lewis. In part three, I promise to get back to Matt and Matt and go deep on just how wrong things can go wrong in The Play That Goes Wrong. And creator Henry Lewis will be back for that one, too. He's got a great story about raspberries. But here, in part two, it's New York Times comedy critic Jason Zinnemann, the author of a great book about David Letterman, by the way, Letterman, the Last Giant of Late Night. Jason gives me the full backdrop on what the success of this play, which is not political, partisan, or cynical, and which to my mind was the best written play in the past few years, even though it's not even written in the typical playwriting sense, what all that says about the current state of Broadway.
I missed the show when it first came out, and I saw it in London after I was running for it with my kid, and I had a really strong reaction to it. And then I saw it. I was like, oh, we got to go see the other show by Mischief. And you know, that was interesting about them. I am the perfect person to talk about it because they are an improv troupe in London, which is, a lot of this is very misunderstood because long form improv really isn't a thing in London.
Herald, they don't do that kind of thing.
They have a much less of a tradition over there. And so this is like, I think, and this is something I've been writing about and talking about for 15 years of covering Broadway, is that there's a certain kind of really well-made, really funny, middle-brow comedy that Broadway used to specialize in and used to dominate in the culture. And it no longer does, and it's ceded that territory to television and stand-up and all these other areas. But what's remarkable to me is this company Mischief, which is an improv company, it's like Second City, right, has come along and proven that, oh, surprise, surprise, people actually want to see a hilarious physical comedy, you know, pinpoint timing, and it's not an accident that Noises Off has been revived many times. And I think it's notable that it came from a Comedy World source. In the theater, they've kind of internalized the idea that, like, all right, this is dead. The Boulevard comedy is gone. Neil Simon is, those days are finished. And so this doesn't have an audience. And what was notable to me, I mean, the play that Gone Wrong, it, to me, is exceptional. It's a couple of form of it. The other play they did, they've done several, but the second play that's running, called the play about the bank robbery, I talked to someone who's part of the production about this, about, oh, are you going to transfer that show to New York? And that would be the real test, because, first of all, they're making fun of an American form. So there's some things they get a little off that American audiences will notice that English audiences will not.
I see.
They're making fun of noir movies, etc.
Their specificity is a little bit askew.
Yeah. Although it has a couple elements that are fantastic, but it isn't as good as the play It Goes Wrong. But the audiences love it. I mean,
well, sure.
The same way. And it would be interesting to see if, like, a less successful, because, you know, Neil Simon could throw whatever he wanted in the 60s, it would be a hit. And I'm just sort of shocked, particularly now that I've moved from covering comedy to covering, I mean, to covering
theater
to covering comedy.
Yeah.
And I'm out, you know, every night going to clubs where there's this huge audience of people who want to laugh.
Well, we will dig back into the play that goes wrong in just a moment, but I do want to put a little context on that shift that you've made.
Yeah.
Because I've read your keynote at the Shakespeare Theater Company, and I agree with, I think, all of it.
Right.
But that will help us put a little context around this, because, you know, you wrote the book on Letterman, I was a writer on The Daily Show. We both love comedy, but we also both love theater.
Right.
The premise of what you were suggesting was that you made the case that recently, even on Broadway, comedy is eating theater's lunch. Now, I don't know if that was your headline, but nonetheless, that was the headline. Can I ask you, as best as you can, in slightly less than the length of a keynote speech, to make that case as best you can right now?
Well, I think that stand-up and improv are ascendant on multiple fronts, right? On a kind of, let's take one. A lot of, if you're a 21-year-old graduates from college right now, and you're interested in performing, there's a good chance that you will look at the UCB, Second City, Juilliard, Yale, and you will choose, you'll look at who is successful in the world and who you want to be, and you'll go to UCB or Second City.
It also helps that those places are cheaper.
It helps, although they're not. That's true.
But no, you're absolutely right.
But that
right.
wasn't the case decades ago. So and we haven't even seen.
And I think
the
you mentioned your colleagues at the New York Times are taking improv classes at night.
Yes, so many
of
them.
It is de rigueur. It is the coin of the realm. It is pervasive. It is a bit of a bubble, comedy bubble. But,
yes.
But who knows how big it'll get?
That's one data point,
yeah.
Right? It's worth also thinking a little bit about the implications for this, that you're going to get 30-year-old artists who have a different skill set because they went to improv training than 30 years ago than theater artists. Anyways, second of all, I think if you look at sort of the cultural conversation, improv and stand-up are live art forms. And they're constantly being talked about. The stars in these fields, whether they're Hannah Gatsby or Gary Goldman or whoever it is, are ascendant. And because of that, you see increasingly Broadway bringing more and more of these artists to be the comic relief on Broadway. In reverse, for years, the comic playwright has been coming scarce. And
I agree, because the comedians can have the luxury of being more responsive to the current zeitgeist. Plays take a while to write and produce. But I do wonder why we can't find some, carve out some space. As you pointed out, there are 10 non-comedic plays being produced for any one play that might see the light of day. Why is it? We don't want to laugh?
I mean, I think the people absolutely want to laugh, and it's why when Christopher Rang's show, his last production was a big hit, the mischief shows are big hits. I think the appetite is still there. I have theories on why this has happened. I don't think it actually is because
comedians are just flooding the zone.
That's one part of it. I think it primarily has to do with the economics of Broadway. That the economics of Broadway, the everything always goes back, in my opinion, to ticket prices.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Now what's happened is that it's become so prohibitively expensive, not just Broadway, but also off-Broadway and regional theater, to see
it's
a show.
It's ludicrous.
It's ludicrous, yeah. That it's raised the stakes on your experience to such a level that it has got to either be an incredibly important piece of serious work by Tom
that
Stopper.
That will change your life and you can tell your kids about.
Exactly, which you're definitely going to stand up and give an applaud no matter how mediocre it was. Or it's got to be something with 50 dancers, the kind of candy-colored showmanship of it all has to be off the hook. And that,
by the way, we can talk about the automatic standing ovations another time, because yes. I do agree that's also a piece of inflation that should be attended to.
Totally. So I think because of that, the sort of great middle has disappeared, and that isn't only comedy that's hurt, but I would say one of the biggest casualties have been, and again, I use this word which people often think is derogatory, but I actually say with affection, the middle brow comedy has gone extinct. Yeah. And look, comedy has a long history of reputable and disreputable forms, and you can't always divorce one for the other, and you have to be able to fail, just like in theater. And when occasionally a low or middle brow comedy comes to Broadway, like One Man, Two Governors, it does spectacularly well. I mean, that was a show that was rooted in all these old English comic forms that would still be remarkable.
So it has to be great, but it also benefits from being somewhat rare. If it does so well, it often has the benefit because it's the only comedy on Broadway that's not a comedian. It's a play.
Yes. What producers think is that a comedy is not going to be as high stakes and as transcendental experience. So that sort of middle of it is gone. But what I believe is that producers are not, and this isn't the first time this has happened, acting in their own best interest. There is money to be made that they're leaving on the table if they just invested in comic playwrights, or even maybe there's all these comedy writers who are writing for a multitude of platforms, give them money to workshop and write plays. And
being one
them.
Of those, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I'd love that avenue. So stipulated, comedy is eating theater's lunch. But in the play that goes wrong, we actually have both. We have a comedy about a piece of theater. I came at the play that goes wrong as a fan of just straight up great writing. I actually consider it one of the best written plays in the past decade, easy. Mm. What they do with writing conventions, the circular dialogue they get into, the misaligned couplets, I just think all of that is genius. And maybe that's because I'm a snob about it and so impressed with how they do it. They're tacticians in that way, let alone the comedic timing, the farce of it all. But I'm wondering if you're a critic of comedy and theater, beyond the writing, why do you think I like it so much? Why am I such a cynic?
I can answer.
So joyful at this, and if I had a ticket for it tonight for the eighth time, I'd go tonight.
I'll tell you why.
How does it break through my barriers?
And at the risk, I'm going to do something I don't like to do, which is I'm going to criticize critics.
Oh, okay.
I'm
going to
criticize my own tribe here, which critics take a lot of flack, theater critics in particular, and a lot of unearned flack from theater people. But in this case, I think somebody who is a comedy writer like yourself understands the incredible difficulty of pulling off all the various kinds of comedy in that show. And you're absolutely right. There isn't just one. There's everything from pratfalls to jokes on language. There's kind of old vaudeville kind of stuff. There's many different kinds of comedy. And as someone like yourself who's in the business knows how easy it is for those things to go badly or mediocrely. And critics, on the other hand, I do think, and I'm generalizing here, have a bit of a blind spot, not in terms of appreciating the level of difficulty, that actually pulling that show off is as hard as pulling off a Michael Frayn play about big ideas. So it, you know, that play got fairly good reviews, but it didn't get raves here, and I think it deserved it because it's often the difference between a good review and a rave has to do with the level of ambition the critic assumes that is going on, and in my opinion, that's the blind spot.
I utterly agree, and I'm glad I made you say it because you said it with more eloquence than I could have, but also because it's on you now.
That's true.
I happen to agree that that's it, the level of difficulty. It's hard to get any play mounted, let's be honest.
Yes.
And so we all should come at it with some charity.
Yeah.
I feel, even critics.
Right. And they do.
And they do, fair enough.
Yeah.
I would even say there it's working at a level thematically that we may not see because it's investigating the idea of incompetence right now because these are incompetent thespians that still manage to get to the curtain call despite everything.
Right.
Finding a way for the audience to root for incompetent people is hard to do right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a great comedic conceit, certainly. It's this D-level theater troupe who has made too many big swings, James and the Peach, and yet they keep trying. It's the play that goes wrong right now in a country that's going wrong, in a world that's going wrong.
Well, you know, the other thing I would say that I was impressed with this show, I saw it in the tradition of a specific kind of comedy that you rarely see anymore, and this opinion was underlined while seeing their other show, which is that it reminded me of old Buster Keaton, which is to say, yes, it's comedy, but there's an element that's kind of like a contemporary action movie that which Buster Keaton, certainly, you see the Buster Keaton's, they seem like action movies, and actions where incredibly
the walls fall around them.
Yes, and those are real walls. Those aren't CGI walls. And you're seeing that ceiling and that stage actually collapse, and that's a real heavy person on there falling there with you. And there is a level of excitement and high stakes when you're seeing that kind of danger on stage. And I do think their other show had a similar scene, which was incredibly scary and dangerous to watch. And there's elements of it which are similar to watching the circus, the acrobats. But there's also, to me, it's more of this very specific kind of comedy that once was a steady part of our pop culture diet and now isn't.
I actually think they have it both ways, or they get it both ways, which is they get to have the high stakes of actual danger. You get a sense that something could actually be going wrong there, and someone could fall. But they also have the low stakes of you get to laugh at it because it's just a play. It's just a play.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, let me ask you a question.
I have no answers.
Okay. Well, let's see. To play devil's advocate and defend the critics now, because
forgive me. Did the critics not like to play?
No, they liked it. They didn't rave about it. Didn't rave about it. But what they did rave about is Noises Off.
Of course, yeah.
And which is a similar,
as they should.
So it's not like they don't, you know, that they can't. Or I would say One Man, Two Governors also get raves.
Yeah, yeah.
It's surprising we don't have one of those, at least one of those every season. Like, they're so obviously commercial to me.
I agree.
Because the other thing I would say is, again, I saw some of my kids. You can take your kids to these shows.
Yeah.
And also, you know, musicals are traditionally much more commercial than plays, right? For a variety of reasons. But this kind of action-packed danger, that is, well, one of the reasons they're more commercial is because families love them, right? This, you know, my kids went berserk over the show, and I'm not sure. I think they would go berserk over Noises Off, but I'm not as sure. So, I mean, yeah, it does seem like it's...
I think you have an answer for your own question, because I believe you had cited... You cited a group of theater makers who had worked in comedy who, with a grant from the Mellon Foundation, met to talk about why comedy is so scarce and why there's a bias against comedy, And the list of reasons for the bias against comedy in the theater, which include, and by the way, it feels like I'm about to start a top 10 list, speaking of your Letterman book, four reasons. One, skepticism that comedy is important. Two, not trusting silliness. Three, the criticism that something is, quote, sitcom-y, unquote. Four, that too many artistic directors have no sense of humor. So
I'm the son of an artistic director, so that's very funny to me.
There you go. But I think you and I are coming to some conclusion that in its own way, comedy can be important. So number one should be written off. Who's to say about the other three?
Yes.
And what, you know, you can't control for the other three. Some artistic directors don't have a sense of humor. Fine.
Well, that gets to another point, which answers the earlier question about why there aren't so great. It's not why there aren't more of these comedies. The real truth is, and this is that the people who are in charge of producing shows on Broadway, people who and who run the literary departments at the big regional theaters and the gatekeepers, yeah. They simply don't go to comedy clubs, to improv right. theaters. Right. There's a lot of theater-like things going on at improv theaters. There's a lot of like hour-long shows.
They're blending into each other in that sense, yeah.
They are, right. But like, you know, it's the same thing true. Like SNL doesn't go to the Lorne Michaels doesn't go to off-Broadway theaters to find talent where there's a ton of people who Lauren Benanti would be an incredible SNL cast member, but for completely arbitrary members.
Colbert's using her for that reason.
Of course, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
He understands the way they don't. Yeah. But it's the same thing true for theater people, that yeah. the theater producers aren't looking at this vast universe of incredibly talented people in this city that they live in because they're looking at the same theater pipelines right. that they've always looked at.
Speaking of Colbert and of Letterman and the talents on those shows who could be tapped to write the next great comedy play, I couldn't let Jason go without talking about a central figure in his book about David Letterman, someone I'm proud to call an old friend, Letterman's first head writer Merrill Marco, who, as it happens, was just given the Paddy Chayefsky Laurel Award by the Writers Guild. Chayefsky, of course, was one of our greatest playwrights, and funny, too.
One of the arguments that the book sort of implicitly makes is that to understand why David Letterman had this revolutionary impact on comedy, you have to understand Meryl Marco. Not just know that she was the head writer and not just know that, you know, she came up with a lot of things like the top 10 list or Stuart Petrick's, but also to understand how her particular sensibility matched perfectly with Letterman and pushed him in areas where he needed pushing. Mm-hmm. So what was critical for writing the piece was that, and I miss this, you know, she was just a great, great source. And there was periods of time, you know, weeks, months where, you know, I'd be talking to her every day. We would do it over, she likes to communicate she's a writer through yeah. and through.
Oh,
so
yeah.
she would be emailing or text or
absolutely.
or over GChat or
whatever.
Or I guess it was emails. But to get that kind of, I would be studying some old show and I would write her and be like, well, what were you thinking here? And she would respond yeah. and then we'd get into, and then through that, this project, it was actually quite like one of the wonderful things of my job is you can have these kind of, you know, very intense reporter source relationships where you're talking to someone all the time over years and you really get to know somebody and you could feel, you have to do that to feel confident to be sort of get inside their head a bit.
Definitely.
And she's an incredibly funny, brilliant person, as you know. But then I went to LA and I met her but it was better to do it by writing.
I could have told you that. Meryl's a writer and she'd write one hell of a Broadway play. So there you have it. The Play That Goes Wrong reinvents a hit Broadway comedy by updating an old screwball with style and straight-up virtuosity. That's how it goes right. But in the next part, a future episode, we'll find out how The Play That Goes Wrong goes really wrong. Creator Henry Lewis and actors Matt Harrington and Matt Walker tell me the worst things that have gone wrong, from stage crashers to errant raspberries, and how when it goes wrong, they still make it go right. Jason Zinnemann is the comedy critic for the New York Times and the author of Letterman, The Last Giant of Late Night. If you enjoy The Backdrop, subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you listen. The Backdrop is produced by Nella Vera, edited by Nella, and by me, and part of the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.